You must lose your human form. You don't yet know about the human mold and the human form. The human form is a force and the human mold is a mold. Everything has a particular mold. Plants have molds, animals have molds, worms have molds. Sorcerers have the avenue of their dreaming to lead them to the mold. The mold of men is definitely an entity which can be seen by some of us at certain times when we are imbued with power, and by all of us, for sure, at the moment of our death. The mold is the source, the origin of man, since without the mold to group together the force of life, there is no way for that force to assemble itself into the shape of man. The human form is a sticky force that makes us the people we are. The human form has no form. It's anything, but in spite of not having form, it possesses us during our lives and doesn't leave us until we die. A warrior must drop the human form in order to change, to really change. Otherwise, there is only talk about change. One cannot change one iota as long as one holds on to the human form. A warrior knows that he cannot change, and yet he makes it his business to try to change, even though he knows that he won't be able to. That's the only advantage a warrior has over the average man. The warrior is never disappointed when he fails to change. The only thing that makes you think you are yourself is the form. Once it leaves, you are nothing. A warrior without form begins to see an eye. The formless warrior uses that eye to start dreaming. If you don't have a form, you don't have to go to sleep to do your dreaming. The eye in front of you pulls you every time you want to go. Everything has to be sifted through our human form. When we have no form, then nothing has form, and yet everything is present. The art of the dreamer is to hold the image of his dream. Our art as ordinary people is that we know how to hold the image of what we are looking at. We just do it. That is, our bodies do it. In dreaming, we have to do the same thing, except that in dreaming, we have to learn how to do it. We have to struggle not to look, but merely to glance, and yet hold the image. Everything we say is a reflection of the world of people. You talk and act the way you do because you're clinging to the human form. Everything in a warrior's world depends on personal power, and personal power depends on impeccability. Part of being impeccable for a warrior is never to hinder others with his thoughts. You indulge in not trying to change. That's as wrong as feeling disappointed with your failures. Warriors must be impeccable in their effort to change in order to scare the human form and shake it away. After years of impeccability, a moment will come when the form cannot stand it any longer and it leaves. The art of a sorcerer is to be inconspicuous even in the midst of people. Concentrate totally on trying not to be obvious. To learn to become unnoticeable in the midst of all of this is to know the art of stalking. Be calm and self-controlled, and give others your undivided attention. The whole issue of sorcery is perception. A warrior must notice everything. That's his trick, and there lies his advantage. It is an honor and a pleasure to be a warrior, and it is the warrior's fortune to do what he has to do. What is the art of stalking? A hunter just hunts. A stalker stalks anything, including himself. An impeccable stalker can turn anything into prey. We can even stalk our own weaknesses. You do it in the same way you stalk prey. You figure out your routines until you know all the doing of your weaknesses, and then you come up upon them and pick them up like rabbits inside a cage. Any habit is, in essence, a doing, and a doing needs all its parts in order to function. If some parts are missing, a doing is disassembled. A warrior eats quietly and slowly and very little at a time. The only deterrent to our despair is the awareness of our death, the key to the sorcerer's scheme of things. The awareness of our death is the only thing that can give us the strength to withstand the duress and pain of our lives and our fears of the unknown. Volition alone is the deciding factor. In other words, one has to make up one's mind to bring that awareness to bear witness on one's acts. We are human creatures. Who knows what's waiting for us or what kind of power we may have? It doesn't matter what anybody says or does. You must be an impeccable man yourself. The fight is right here in this chest. It takes all the time and all the energy we have to conquer the idiocy in us. And that's what matters. The rest is of no importance. To be an impeccable warrior will give you vigor and youth and power. I have taught you to be dispassionate. The world of people goes up and down, and people go up and down with their world. As sorcerers, we have no business following them in their ups and downs. The art of the sorcerer is to be outside everything and be unnoticeable. And more than anything else, the art of sorcerers is never to waste their power. We hold the images of the world with our attention. Let your attention go from the images of the world. If you don't focus your attention on the world collapses. Instead of fighting to focus, let go of the images by gazing fixedly at distant hills or by gazing at water like a river or by gazing at the clouds. If you gaze with your eyes open, you get dizzy and the eyes get tired. But if you half close them and blink a lot and move them from mountain to mountain or from cloud to cloud, you can look for hours. As I've told you, the Tonal and the Nahual are two different worlds. In one you talk, in the other you act. At first, all of us secretly do not want the world of the Nahual. We are afraid and have second thoughts. Our unbending intent and our impeccability gets us through that. Everyone can see, and yet we choose not to remember what we see. With our attention, we can hold the images of a dream in the same way we hold the images of the world. The art of the dreamer is the art of attention. Your reason is the demon that keeps you chained. You have to vanquish it if you want to achieve the realization of my teachings. The issue, therefore, has been how to vanquish your reason. By reason, I don't mean the capacity for comprehending, inferring, or thinking in an orderly, rational way. To me, reason means attention. The core of our being is the act of perceiving, and the magic of our being is the act of awareness. Perception and awareness can be a single, functional, inextricable unit with two domains. The first one is the attention of the tonal, that is to say, the capacity of average people to perceive and place their awareness on the ordinary world of everyday life. Our first ring of power, our awesome but taken for granted ability to impart order to our perception of our daily world. The second domain is the attention of the Nahual, the capacity to place our awareness on the non-ordinary world. It's our second ring of power, or the altogether portentous ability all of us have, but only sorcerers use, to impart order to the non-ordinary world. What I have struggled to vanquish, or rather suppress in you, is not your reason as the capacity for rational thought, but your attention of the tonal, or your awareness of the world of common sense. The daily world exists because we know how to hold its images. Consequently, if one drops the attention needed to maintain those images, the world collapses. Practice is what counts. Once you get your attention on the images of your dream, your attention is hooked for good. In the end, you can hold the images of any dream. Our first ring of power is engaged very early in our lives, and we live under the impression that that is all there is to us. Our second ring of power, the attention of the Nahual, remains hidden for the immense majority of us, and only at the moment of our death is it revealed to us. There is a pathway to reach it, however, which is available to every one of us, but which only sorcerers take, and that pathway is through dreaming. Dreaming is in essence the transformation of ordinary dreams into affairs involving volition. Dreamers, by engaging their attention of the Nahual and focusing it on items and events of their ordinary dreams, change those dreams into dreaming. There are no procedures to arrive at the attention of the Nahual, only pointers. Finding your hands in your dreams is the first pointer. Then the exercise of paying attention is elongated to finding objects, looking for specific features such as buildings, streets, and so on. From there, the jump is to dream about specific places at specific times of the day. The final stage is drawing the attention of the Nahual to focus on the total self. That final stage is usually ushered in by a dream that that many of us have had at one time or another, in which one is looking at oneself sleeping in bed. By the time a sorcerer has had such a dream, his attention has been developed to such a degree that instead of waking himself up, as most of us would do in a similar situation, he turns on his heels and engages himself in activity as if he were acting in the world of everyday life. From that moment on, there is a breakage, a division of sorts, in the otherwise unified personality. The result of engaging the attention of the Nahual and developing it to the height and sophistication of our daily attention of the world is the other self, an identical being as oneself, but made in dreaming. There are no definite standard steps for reaching that double, as there are no definite steps for us to reach our daily awareness. We simply do it by practicing. In the act of engaging the attention of the Nahual, we find the steps. Practice dreaming without letting your fears make it into an encumbering production. There is a crack between the worlds, and it is more than a metaphor. It is rather the capacity to change levels of attention. Don't try to reason it out. Act like a warrior and follow what I've told you. We choose only once. We choose either to be warriors or to be ordinary men. A second choice does not exist, not on this earth. The only freedom warriors have is to behave impeccably. Not only is impeccability freedom, but it is the only way to scare away the human form. The second attention, or the attention of the Nahual, is reached only after warriors have swept the top of their tables, their islands of the Tanal, clean. Reaching the second attention makes the two attentions into a single unit, and that unit is the totality of oneself. Diligence in an impeccable life is the only way to lose the human form. Losing the human form is the essential requirement for unifying the two attentions. The attention under the table is the key to everything sorcerers do. In order to reach that attention, I have taught you dreaming. Another way to learn how to do dreaming is by learning gazing. If you gaze at a pile of leaves for hours, your thoughts get quiet. Without thoughts, the attention of the Tanal wanes, and suddenly your second attention hooks onto the leaves, and the leaves become something else. The moment when the second attention hooks onto something is called stopping the world. The difficulty in gazing is to learn to quiet down the thoughts. Once you can stop the world, you are a gazer. And the only way of stopping the world is by trying. Combine gazing at dry leaves and looking for your hands in dreaming. Once you have trapped your second attention with dry leaves, you do gazing and dreaming to enlarge it. And that's all there is to gazing. All we do in order to trap our second attention is to try and try. Once dreamers know how to stop the world by gazing at leaves, they can gaze at other things. And finally, when the dreamers lose their form altogether, they can gaze at anything. First, after leaves, gaze at small plants. Small plants are very dangerous. Their power is concentrated. They have a very intense light, and they feel when dreamers are gazing at them. They immediately move their light and shoot it at the gazer. Dreamers have to choose one kind of plant to gaze at. Next, gaze at trees. Dreamers also have a particular kind of tree to gaze at. Next, gaze at moving living creatures. Small insects are by far the best object. Their mobility makes them innocuous to the gazer. The opposite of plants, which draw their light directly from the earth. The next step is to gaze at rocks. Rocks are very old and powerful and have a specific light which is rather greenish in contrast with the white light of plants and the yellowish light of mobile living beings. Rocks do not open up easily to gazers, but it is worthwhile for gazers to persist because rocks have special secrets concealed in their core, secrets that can aid sorcerers in their dreaming. A second series in the order of gazing is to gaze at cyclic phenomena, rain and fog. Gazers can focus their second attention on the rain itself and move with it, or focus it on the background and use the rain as a magnifying glass of sorts to reveal hidden features. Places of power or places to be avoided are found by gazing through rain. Places of power are yellowish, and places to be avoided are intensely green. The position of the body is of great importance while one is gazing. One has to sit on the ground, on a soft mat of leaves, or on a cushion made out of natural fibers. The back has to be propped against a tree or a stump or a flat rock. The body has to be thoroughly relaxed. The eyes are never fixed on the object in order to avoid tiring them. The gaze consists in scanning very slowly the object gazed at, going counterclockwise, but without moving the head, the idea is to let your perception play without analyzing it. The effect you are after in gazing is to learn to stop the internal dialogue. To do that, you can focus your view as gazers do, or, as I've already told you, flood your awareness while walking by not focusing your sight on anything. That is, sort of feel with your eyes everything in the 180-degree range in front of you while you keep your fixed and unfocused eyes just above the line of the horizon. The essential feature of sorcery is shutting off the internal dialogue. Stopping the internal dialogue is an operational way of describing the act of disengaging the attention of the tonal. Once we stop our internal dialogue, we also stop the world. That is an operational description of the inconceivable process of focusing our second attention. Part of us is always kept under lock and key because we are afraid of it. And to our reason, that part of us is like an insane relative that we keep locked in a dungeon. That part is our second attention, and when it finally can focus on something, the world stops. Since we, as average men, know only the attention of the tonal, it is not too far-fetched to say that once that attention is cancelled, the world indeed has to stop. The focusing of our wild, untrained second attention is, perforce, terrifying. The way to keep that insane relative from bursting in on us is by shielding ourselves with our endless internal dialogue. Dreamers can gaze in order to do dreaming, and then they can look for their dreams in their gazing. For example, you can gaze at the shadows of rocks, and then, in your dreaming, you might find out that those shadows have light. You can then, while gazing, look for the light in the shadows until you find it. Gazing and dreaming go together. A warrior has no compassion for anyone. To have compassion means that you wish the other person to be like you, to be in your shoes, and you lend a hand just for that purpose. The hardest thing in the world is for a warrior to let others be. The impeccability of a warrior is to let them be and to support them in what they are. That means, of course, that you trust them to be impeccable warriors themselves. If they are not, then it's your duty to be impeccable yourself and not say a word. Only a sorcerer who sees and is formless can afford to help anyone. Every effort on our part is an arbitrary act guided by our own self-interest alone. The problem for you as a challenge is whether or not you will be capable of developing your will or the power of your second attention to focus indefinitely on anything you want. Our total being consists of two perceivable segments. The first is the familiar physical body, which all of us can perceive. The second is the luminous body, which is a cocoon that only seers can perceive. A cocoon that gives us the appearance of giant luminous eggs. One of the most important goals of sorcery is to reach the luminous cocoon, a goal which is fulfilled through the sophisticated use of dreaming and through a vigorous, systematic exertion called not doing. I've defined not doing as an unfamiliar act which engages our total being by forcing it to become conscious of its luminous segment. To explain these concepts, I've made a three-part uneven division of our consciousness. The smallest, the first attention, or the consciousness that every normal person has developed in order to deal with the daily world. It encompasses the awareness of the physical body. Another larger portion, the second attention, is the awareness we need in order to perceive our luminous cocoon and to act as luminous beings. The second attention is brought forth through deliberate training or by an accidental trauma, and it encompasses the awareness of the luminous body. The last portion, which is the largest, is the third attention. It's an immeasurable consciousness which engages undefinable aspects of the awareness of the physical and the luminous bodies. The battlefield of warriors is the second attention, which is something like a training ground for reaching the third attention. The compulsion to possess and hold on to things is not unique. Everyone who wants to follow the warrior's path has to rid himself of this fixation in order not to focus our dreaming body on the weak face of the second attention. The dreaming body, sometimes called the double or the other, because it is a perfect replica of the dreamer's body, is inherently the energy of a luminous being, a whitish, phantom-like emanation, which is projected by the fixation of the second attention into a three-dimensional image of the body. The dreaming body is as real as anything we deal with in the world. The second attention is unavoidably drawn to focus on our total being as a field of energy and transforms that energy into anything suitable. The easiest thing is, of course, the image of the physical body with which we are already thoroughly familiar from our daily lives and the use of our first attention. What channels the energy of our total being to produce anything that might be within the boundaries of possibility is known as will. At the level of luminous beings, the range is so broad that it is futile to try to establish limits. Thus, the energy of a luminous being can be transformed through will into anything. We are not merely whatever our common sense requires us to believe we are. We are, in actuality, luminous beings, capable of becoming aware of our luminosity. As luminous beings aware of our luminosity, we are capable of unraveling different facets of our awareness or our attention. That unraveling could be brought about by a deliberate effort, as we are doing ourselves, or accidentally through a bodily trauma. The old sorcerers deliberately placed different facets of their attention on material objects. By unraveling another facet of our attention, we might become receptors for the projections of ancient sorcerers' second attention. Those sorcerers were impeccable practitioners with no limit to what they could accomplish with the fixation of their second attention. Be fluid, at ease in whatever situation you find yourself. Your challenge is to deal with people with ease regardless of what they do to you. Remember what I have said, that it is of no use to be sad and complain and feel justified in doing so, believing that someone is always doing something to us. Nobody is doing anything to anybody, much less to a warrior. You must let go of your desire to cling. The very same thing happened to me. I held on to things, such as the food I liked, the mountains where I lived, the people I used to enjoy talking to, but most of all, I clung to the desire to be liked. Those things are our barriers to losing our human form. Our attention is trained to focus doggedly. That is the way we maintain the world. Now is the time to let go of all that. In order to lose your human form, you should let go of all that ballast. Dissipating a mood through overanalyzing it wastes our power. If you have the same vision in dreaming three times, pay extraordinary attention to it. When a dreamer dreams that he sees himself asleep, he must avoid sudden jolts or surprises and take everything with a grain of salt. The dreamer has to get involved in dispassionate experimentations. Rather than examining his sleeping body, the dreamer walks out of the room. In dreaming, what matters is volition. The corporeality of the body has no significance. It is simply a memory that slows down the dreamer. If you do not stare at things, but only glance at them, just as you do in the daily world, you can arrange your perception. That is, by taking your dreaming for granted, you then can use the perceptual biases of your everyday life. Wait before revealing a finding. Wait for the most appropriate time to let go of something that you hold. Losing the human form brings the freedom to remember yourself. Losing the human form is like a spiral. It gives you the freedom to remember, and this in turn makes you even freer. A warrior knows that he is waiting and knows also what he is waiting for. And while he waits, he feasts his eyes on the world. The ultimate accomplishment of a warrior is joy. Accept your fate in humbleness. The course of a warrior's destiny is unalterable. The challenge is how far he can go within those rigid bounds, how impeccable he can be within those rigid bounds. If there are obstacles in his path, the warrior strives impeccably to overcome them. If he finds unbearable hardship and pain on his path, he weeps, but all his tears put together could not move the line of his destiny the breadth of one hair. Fulfill your fate as a warrior, not as a petty person. Detachment does not automatically mean wisdom, but it is nonetheless an advantage because it allows the warrior to pause momentarily to reassess situations, to reconsider positions. In order to use that extra moment consistently and correctly, however, a warrior has to struggle unyieldingly for a lifetime. A warrior is someone who seeks freedom. Sadness is not freedom. We must snap out of it. Having a sense of detachment entails having a moment's pause to reassess situations. Formlessness is, if anything, a detriment to sobriety and level-headedness. An aspect of being detached, the capacity to become immersed in whatever one is doing, naturally extends to everything one does, including being inconsistent and outright petty. The advantage of being formless is that it allows us a moment's pause, provided that we have the self-discipline and courage to utilize it. We unwittingly focus on fear and distrust, as if those were the only possible options available to us, while all along we have the alternative of deliberately centering our attention on the opposite, the mystery, the wonder of what is happening to us. There are no steps to anything a warrior does. There is only personal power. In the final analysis, every dreamer is different. There are, however, general states. Restful vigil is the preliminary state, a state in which the senses become dormant, and yet one is aware. The second state is dynamic vigil. In this state, one is left looking at a scene, a tableau of sorts, which is static. One sees a three-dimensional picture, a frozen bit of something, a landscape, a street, a house, a person, a face, anything. The third state is passive witnessing. In it, the dreamer is no longer viewing a frozen bit of the world, but is observing, eyewitnessing, an event as it occurs. It is as if the primacy of the visual and auditory senses makes this state of dreaming mainly an affair of the eyes and ears. The fourth state is the one in which you are drawn to act. In it, one is compelled to enterprise, to take steps, to make the most of one's time. This state is called dynamic initiative. You have to look after someone and take care of them in a most selfish fashion. That is, as if they are your own self. Selfishness can be put to a grand use. To harness it is not impossible. The surest way to harness selfishness is through the daily activities of our lives. You are efficient in whatever you do because you have no one to bug the devil out of you. It is no challenge to you to soar like an arrow by yourself. If you are given the task of taking care of someone else, however, your independent effectiveness will go to pieces, and in order to survive, you will have to extend your selfish concern for yourself to include the one under your care. You must honor them regardless of what they do to you, and you must train your body through your interaction with them to feel at ease in the face of the most trying situations. It is much easier to fare well under conditions of maximum stress than to be impeccable under normal circumstances, such as in the interplay with another under your care. Further then, you cannot under any circumstances get angry with them because they are indeed your benefactor. Only through them will you be capable of harnessing your selfishness. You take care of them as a means of training yourself for the hardship of interacting with people. It is imperative that you internalize a mood of ease in the face of difficult social situations. Dreaming begins as a unique state of awareness arrived at by focusing the residue of consciousness, which one still has when asleep, on the elements or the features of one's dreams. The residue of consciousness, called the second attention, is brought into action or is harnessed through exercises of not doing. The essential aid to dreaming is a state of mental quietness called stopping the internal dialogue, or the not doing of talking to oneself. To teach you how to master it, I've made you walk for miles with your eyes held fixed and out of focus at a level just above the horizon, so as to emphasize the peripheral view. This method is effective on two counts. It allows you to stop your internal dialogue, and it trains your attention. By forcing you to concentrate on the peripheral view, I reinforced your capacity to concentrate for long periods of time on one single activity. The best way to enter into dreaming is to concentrate on the area just at the tip of the sternum, at the top of the belly. The attention needed for dreaming stems from that area. The energy needed in order to move and to seek in dreaming stems from the area an inch or two below the belly button. That energy is the will, or the power to select, to assemble. In a woman, both the attention and the energy for dreaming originate from the womb. Anything may suffice as a not doing to help dreaming, provided that it forces the attention to remain fixed. The attention one needs in the beginning of dreaming has to be forcibly made to stay on any given item in a dream. Only through immobilizing our attention can one turn an ordinary dream into dreaming. In dreaming, one has to use the same mechanisms of attention as in everyday life. Our first attention has been taught to focus on the items of the world with great force in order to turn the amorphous and chaotic realm of perception into the orderly world of awareness. The second attention serves the function of a beckoner, a caller of chances. The more it is exercised, the greater the possibility of getting the desired result. But that is also the function of attention in general, a function so taken for granted in our daily life that it has become unnoticeable. If we encounter a fortuitous occurrence, we talk about it in terms of accident or coincidence, rather than in terms of our attention having beckoned the event. The only thing that really counts in making the shift into the dreaming body is anchoring the second attention. Attention is what makes the world. What is important is to store attention in dreaming. The first attention, the attention that makes the world, can never be completely overcome. It can only be turned off for a moment and replaced with the second attention, providing that the body has stored enough of it. Dreaming is naturally a way of storing the second attention. In order to shift into your dreaming body when awake, you have to practice dreaming until it comes out your ears. I have given you three tasks to train your second attention. The first, to find your hands in dreaming. Next, to choose a locale. Focus your attention on it, and then do daytime dreaming to find out if you can really go there. I've suggested that you place someone you know at the site in order to do two things. First, to check subtle changes that might indicate that you were there in dreaming, and second, to isolate unobtrusive detail, which would be precisely what your second attention would zero in on. The most serious problem the dreamer has in this respect is the unbending fixation of the second attention on detail that would be thoroughly undetected by the attention of everyday life, creating in this manner a nearly insurmountable obstacle to validation. What one seeks in dreaming is not what one would pay attention to in everyday life. One strives to immobilize the second attention only in the learning period. After that, one has to fight the almost invincible pull of the second attention and give only cursory glances at everything. In dreaming, one has to be satisfied with the briefest possible views of everything. As soon as one focuses on anything, one loses control. The last generalized task I gave you to train your second attention was to get out of your body. This task begins with a dream in which you find yourself looking at yourself asleep. To elucidate the control of the second attention, I presented the idea of will. Will can be described as the maximum control of the luminosity of the body as a field of energy, or it can be described as a level of proficiency, as a state of being that comes abruptly into the daily life of a warrior at any given time. It is experienced as a force that radiates out of the middle part of the body following a moment of the most absolute silence, or a moment of sheer terror or profound sadness. Those things afford the warrior the concentration needed to use the luminosity of the body and turn it into silence. For a human being, sadness is as powerful as terror. Both can bring the moment of silence. Or the silence comes of itself because the warrior tries for it throughout his life. It is a moment of blackness, a moment still more silent than the moment of shutting off the internal dialogue. That blackness, that silence, gives rise to the intent to direct the second attention, to command it, to make it do things. This is why it's called will. The intent and the effect are will. They are tied together. We don't feel our will because we think that it should be something we know for sure that we are doing or feeling, like getting angry, for instance. Will is very quiet, unnoticeable. Will belongs to the other self. We are in our other selves when we do dreaming. Will is such a complete control of the second attention that it is called the other self. Intent is present everywhere. Intent is what makes the world. People and all other living creatures, for that matter, are the slaves of intent. We are in its clutches. It makes us do whatever it wants. It makes us act in the world. It even makes us die. When we become warriors, though, intent becomes our friend. It lets us be free for a moment. At times, it even comes to us as if it had been waiting around for us. Again, human beings are divided into two. The right side, which is called the tonal, encompasses everything the intellect can conceive of. The left side, called the nahual, is a realm of indescribable features, a realm impossible to contain in words. The left side is perhaps comprehended, if comprehension is what takes place, with the total body, thus its resistance to conceptualization. All the faculties, possibilities, and accomplishments of sorcery, from the simplest to the most astounding, are in the human body itself. The power that governs the destiny of all living beings is called the eagle, or the indescribable force. Providing the luminous shell that comprises one's humanness has been broken, it is possible to find in the indescribable force the faint reflection of man. The indescribable force's irrevocable dictums can then be apprehended by seers, properly interpreted by them, and accumulated in the form of a governing body. Thus the rule was formed. The rule is not a tale. The rule states that every living thing has been granted the power, if it so desires, to seek an opening to freedom and to go through it. To cross over to freedom does not mean eternal life, as eternity is commonly understood, that is, as living forever. What the rule states is that one can keep the awareness which is ordinarily relinquished at the moment of dying. I cannot explain what it means to keep that awareness. My benefactor told me that at the moment of crossing, one enters into the third attention, and the body, in its entirety, is kindled with knowledge. Every cell at once becomes aware of itself and also aware of the totality of the body. This kind of awareness is meaningless to our compartmentalized minds. Therefore, the crux of the warrior's struggle is not so much to realize that the crossing over stated in the rule means crossing to the third attention, but rather to conceive that there exists such an awareness at all. There is a common error, that of overestimating the left side awareness, of becoming dazzled by its clarity and power. To be in the left side awareness does not mean that one is immediately liberated from one's folly. It only means an extended capacity for perceiving, and above all, a greater ability to forget. One has to be utterly humble and carry nothing to defend, not even one's person. One's person should be protected, but not defended. It takes a very long time to clean out the garbage that a luminous being picks up in the world. We are all stiff and feel so self-important. Stalkers deal with people, with the world of ordinary affairs. Stalkers are the practitioners of controlled folly, as the dreamers are the practitioners of dreaming. Controlled folly is the basis for stalking, as dreams are the basis for dreaming. Generally speaking, a warrior's greatest accomplishment in the second attention is dreaming, and in the first attention, his greatest accomplishment is stalking. In the absence of self-importance, a warrior's only way of dealing with the social milieu is in terms of controlled folly. Deal with the world exclusively in terms of controlled folly. A warrior never loses his mind under any circumstances. A warrior is never under siege. To be under siege implies that one has personal possessions that could be blockaded. A warrior has nothing in the world except his impeccability, and impeccability cannot be threatened. Nonetheless, in a battle for one's life, a warrior should strategically use every means available. We must live our lives impeccably, for no other reason than to be impeccable. Although human beings appear to a seer as luminous eggs, the egg-like shape is an external cocoon, a shell of luminosity that houses a most intriguing, haunting, mesmeric core made up of concentric circles of yellowish luminosity, the color of a candle's flame. Losing the human form is the only means of breaking that shell, the only means of liberating that haunting, luminous core. To break the shell means remembering the other self and arriving at the totality of oneself. An unconquerable pessimism overtakes a warrior at a certain point on his path, a sense of defeat, or perhaps more accurately, a sense of unworthiness comes upon him almost unawares. A warrior's resolution to live impeccably in spite of everything cannot be approached as a strategy to ensure success. The warrior enters into a state of unsurpassed humility. When the true poverty of his human resources becomes undeniable, the warrior has no recourse but to step back and lower his head. It is monstrous to think that the world is understandable or that we ourselves are understandable. What we are perceiving is an enigma, a mystery that one can only accept in humbleness and awe. The two sides of a human being are totally separate, and it takes great discipline and determination to break that seal and go from one side to the other. We have been put together by forces incomprehensible to our reason. The only thing we do not have is time. Every minute might be our last, therefore it has to be lived with the spirit. Perception suffers a profound jolt when we are placed in states of quietude in darkness. Our hearing takes the lead then, and the signals from all the living and existing entities around us can be detected, not with our hearing only, but with a combination of the auditory and visual senses in that order. In darkness, the eyes become subsidiary to the ears. Power spots are actual holes in a sort of canopy that prevents the world from losing its shape. A power spot can be utilized as long as one has gathered enough strength in the second attention. The key to withstanding the indescribable force's presence is the potency of one's intent. Without intent, there is nothing. Be impeccable and practice meticulously whatever you learn, and above all, be careful and deliberate in your actions so as not to exhaust your life force in vain. The prerequisite for entering into any of the three stages of attention is the possession of life force, because without it, warriors cannot have direction and purpose. Upon dying, our awareness also enters into the third attention, but only for an instant as a purging action, just before the indescribable force devours it. Stalkers become lighthearted and jovial and enjoy their lives. The second attention belongs to the luminous body, as the first attention belongs to the physical body. Dreaming is in fact a rational state. In dreaming, the right side, the rational awareness, is wrapped up inside the left side awareness in order to give the dreamer a sense of sobriety and rationality. But the influence of rationality has to be minimal and used only as an inhibiting mechanism to protect the dreamer from excesses and bizarre undertakings. Our first attention is hooked to the emanations of the earth, while our second attention is hooked to the emanations of the universe. A dreamer, by definition, is outside the boundaries of the concerns of everyday life. The dreamer's power to focus on their second attention makes them into living slingshots. The stronger and the more impeccable the dreamers are, the further they can project their second attention into the unknown, and the longer their dreaming projections will last. Dreaming is no illusion. It's a step toward the control of the second attention. In other words, you are learning the perceptual bias of that other realm. There is no way on earth that we can order anyone or ourselves to rally knowledge. It is rather a slow affair. The body, at the right time and under the proper circumstances of impeccability, rallies its knowledge without the intervention of desire. The first principle of the art of stalking is that warriors choose their battleground. A warrior never goes into battle without knowing what the surroundings are. To discard everything that is unnecessary is the second principle of the art of stalking. Warriors don't have the world to cushion them, so they must have the rule, yet the rule of stalkers applies to everyone. The first precept of the rule is that everything that surrounds us is an unfathomable mystery. The second precept of the rule is that we must try to unravel these mysteries, but without ever hoping to accomplish this. The third, that a warrior aware of the unfathomable mystery that surrounds him, and aware of his duty to try to unravel it, takes his rightful place among mysteries and regards himself as one. Consequently, for a warrior, there is no end to the mystery of being, whether being means being a pebble or an ant or oneself. That is a warrior's humbleness. One is equal to everything. Apply all the concentration you have to decide whether or not to enter into battle, for any battle is a battle for one's life. This is the third principle of the art of stalking. A warrior must be willing and ready to make his last stand here and now, but not in a helter-skelter way. The fourth principle of the art of stalking is relax, abandon yourself, fear nothing. Only then will the powers that guide us open the road and aid us. Only then. The fifth principle is, when faced with odds that cannot be dealt with, warriors retreat for a moment. They let their minds meander. They occupy their time with something else. Anything would do. The sixth principle, warriors compress time. Even an instant counts. In a battle for your life, a second is an eternity that may decide the outcome. Warriors aim at succeeding, therefore they compress time. Warriors don't waste an instant. A recapitulation is the fort of stalkers, as the dreaming body is the fort of dreamers. It consists of recollecting one's life down to the most insignificant detail. The first stage is a brief recounting of all the incidents in our lives that, in an obvious manner, stand out for examination. The second stage is a more detailed recollection, which starts systematically at a point that could be the moment prior to the stalker sitting, and theoretically could extend to the moment of birth.